it's Mark the Machine Homic.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Diamond Salivary.
Hey everybody, this is Joe LTRJ Dirksen.
Hey guys, this is Jason Nasty McDonald.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Wapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Happy 2007, everybody, from us here at Full Contact Fighter Radio, Mr. Kelsey Mowat and Mr. Brendan Lear. Brendan, Happy New Year, man.
Happy New Year to you, Kelsey. Did you have a festive MMA holiday?
I did. There was a little bit of running around because I had some family in town and had a few other responsibilities, etc., to take care of, but I still managed to enjoy both the UFC and Pride. Unfortunately, all of us up here in Canada didn't get to see the IFL because it wasn't shown up here, and we've complained about that ad nauseum on the show, but I got to see both UFC and Pride and had a very MMA-full weekend. My belly is full with holiday treats and my head's full with MMA memories. That was brutal. I know. I apologize right now. My apologies, everybody. But, Brendan,
okay.
You got home safe from...
I ate so much on the day of the UFC that I actually had to take off my jeans and watch the UFC and fat guy pajama pants, because my belly was so distended from swilling beer and eating holiday treats.
And then you have to watch, you know, arguably the most talented, gifted, athletic fighters, athletes in the world, while feeling extremely out of shape.
It's kind of emasculating, actually, when your wife is like, oh, that Andrei Arlovski's so hot.
Really? She said that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Better hope she's never seen him with shoulder hair, eh? And I was...
Interesting. Maybe we should try to get Andre on the show and get her on the show instead of you, and maybe sparks would fly.
I think you got better luck with St. Pierre winning her over, but it's possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously she doesn't listen to the show because she probably wouldn't care for this intro. But Brent, we got a good show, man. We got Thiago Alves is going to be on the program. He looked really impressive at UFC 66, the big win over Tony D'Souza. And then we've also got Jake Shields, who's going to be fighting Renato Verissimo, upcoming January 20th Gracie Fighting Championship. So, a couple notable, very notable, highly regarded 170-pounders.
Let's get to it.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League kicks off its 2007 inaugural season Friday, January 19th at the Oracle Arena. See Murray Smith's Tiger Sharks battle Marco Huas's Condor. Plus, sibling rivalry comes to life as Ken Shamrock's Lions square off against Frank Shamrock's Razor Claws. Be there Friday, January 19th, 7:30 p.m. at the Oracle Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 510-625-8497 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is the Pitbull, Mr. Thiago Alves. Thiago, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I can't complain. I guess first thing, Thiago, is it's got to be a pretty nice way to end the year with a big win over Tony D'Souza at UFC 66 last weekend. Your thoughts a couple days removed now? Have you had some time to think about the big win?
Not yet. I mean, everything's pretty new to me, you know. I'm living my dream, and I'm fighting the biggest show in my weight division, and thank God I'm doing good, man. You know, I didn't expect the fight to be that quick, you know, the way the fight goes, but I train hard, man. I think when you train hard, it pays off, you know, so it's all good, man. It's all good.
Yeah.
Thiago, I wanted to congratulate you on your fight, first of all. What was it like to you putting on such a great performance in a night of other great performances? Does that mean a lot to you, being having one of the premier fights of the night?
Yeah, no, that's like I said, it's my dream come true. You know, I came away from Brazil, man, to be here. You know, I came here 19 years old, and I'm here 4 years now. And when I came here, I didn't expect nothing this. You know, of course, I always dream about being the champion and everything, but I didn't expect to be like that. You know, it's very, very grateful. I'm very, very thankful for everything, you know, happening in my life right now. I'm just going to keep it training hard, you know. I'm going to take this week off, but after that, man, I'm going to start training again. I want to train hard and hard. Maybe in February, March, I'll be back in UFC again.
And Thiago, after the first round ended in your fight against Tony, it was quite clear that he was in a ton of trouble. Going in during the break, Thiago, did you think that, you know what, in the next few, shortly in the second round, that you were going to end the fight like you did?
No, I didn't expect. Tony's a tough guy, man, and I watch all his fights. You know, even he'd be knocked down like many times in a fight. He almost got back, you know, and won the fight. You know, he got just too long. I saw him fighting Brazil and everything. It's always like that. He got hit, but the guy has a big heart, man. You know, you can't nothing less from Tony. You know, I knew he was gonna come out strong, do anything to win the second round. You know, but like I said, man, I gotta just take my time. You know, wait for the right time and do my thing, man. Try and knock him out. You know.
Thiago, tell us a little bit about your history and your martial arts background. Obviously, you've been you're with American Top Team now, and what about you seem to be incredibly confident in your stand up, and you've been described as having a Muay Thai background. Did you bring to American Top Team primarily Muay Thai training, and have you received all your groundwork there?
Yeah, I mean, I started in Muay Thai when I was 14 in Brazil, you know. I used to have my coach. My coach spent like 3 years in Europe, learned the Thai boxing and everything. So I did a couple fights in Brazil, a couple Muay Thai fights. I was Brazilian champion, you know, state champion in Brazil 2-3 times. And I did about 21 fights here in Brazil. It was 11 Muay Thai fights, 9 MMA fights, and I think it was 1 amateur boxing. You know, so when I got invited to America Top Team, I was the only striker in the team. You know, in America Top Team, we got like 18 black belts, you know. So I was the only striker in the team. You know, that was pretty good for the team, you know, because it's good to have a striker. And it was awesome for me because, you know, I used to train Jiu-Jitsu, but not like in America Top Team. You know, we got Ricardo Libores, man, it's a fantastic Jiu-Jitsu coach. You know, we got all those guys, world champion and everything. So it's perfect for me.
And going in against the fight against Tony, I'm assuming the game plan was to stand with him. I mean, it looked like that's what you wanted to do, and clearly through that strategy, you won, Thiago. But if the fight was to spill to the ground more often, I'm assuming you felt comfortable going up against D'Souza's ground capabilities?
Yeah, that's what I was saying, man. I trained with 18 black belts in America Top Team, you know, so I'm pretty much comfortable in everywhere, you know. Of course, when we fight MMA, you know, once you throw a couple punches, the jiu-jitsu changes. It changes everything, you know. The guy who used to do jiu-jitsu, once he get hit in the face, it kind of changes his game, you know. So that's all I was working on. I try to stay in stand-up. I want to go to the ground, work my grounding pound. If I stand about, I try to kick up to stand-up, you know. Just put him in my game plan, you know.
Tell us a little bit about now the success in the last couple of years of American Top Team. You have a lot of great fighters training there, like you mentioned, 18 black belts. How do you guys decide? Do you have similar managers, and how do you decide basically who from your team goes to fight where in terms of organization?
Yeah, no, we got a lot of fighters, man. I mean, we got Mr. Dan Lambert. No, he's the owner of the team. He take care all the measurement and everything. You know, who's gonna fight, and you know, each show and everywhere. You know, that's him who take care of Mr. Dan Lamb. He's the owner, man. He's the guy who makes all the dreams come true, man. Without him, we'd be anything. We'd be nothing, you know. He's the man. And yeah, man, no, we got a lot of guys, bro. You know, a lot of guys. That's a good thing about America's Top Team. We're pretty young, man. We just 4 years in a row, you know. I think we're doing pretty good, you know. A couple more years, we got our first belt this year, you know, with Jay-Z on the K-1. And we got four title shots. Unfortunately, you just get one, you know. But it's all good, man. We're pretty young, you know. All those guys, all the other teams, they got like 10 years in a row. You're pretty young, man, just 4 years in a row. So I think we're doing pretty good, you know. And it's just the beginning, man. 07 is going to be us. You know, 07 is going to be just ATT, man, all the way. I promise you that.
Well, Thiago, I had a chance to see your fight before the UFC 66 with John Alessio on UFC On Demand, and I was really impressed, and so were the commentators, with your leg kicks, and you really sort of dismantled John with the leg kicks. Diago, when you're making a game plan against someone like John Alessio, who's a little bit more known for being a striker, did you just feel that he was going to be sort of tailor-made for your kind of style? Did you expect him to try to stand with you for the entire fight?
I watch all his fights, and every fight's a different strategy, man. It's the thing who wants to fight, Everybody pretty much, they got the same technical level, so you gotta do your strategy, I saw his fight, every time he punched, he exposed his leg, That's what usually boxers do, Every time he punched, he opened the leg for the low kicks. And I saw every time he got hit, he tried to take the guy down. So I knew after landing a couple shots on him, he's going to shoot for the double leg. So that was pretty much the game plan. Just stand up, hit me a little bit, wait for him, try to take me down. And avoid the takedown, stand on top and pound him.
Mm-hmm. Taylor, let me ask you a bit of a technical question. We've seen a lot in the last year, especially in Pride and the UFC, the sort of resurgence of leg kicks being used as really effective weapons. Now, when you're training in the gym and you have shin guards on, obviously you can let go of ferocious leg kicks. So when you're actually in a fight, how hard would you say you're kicking in relation to your maximum ability to kick hard?
In a fight?
Yeah.
In a fight, I kick everything I can, man. Everything. But that's the thing. You gotta kick, with all your strength, but you can't lose your balance. So you gotta think like that. I'm gonna give everything, but I can't lose my body. So that's why when we train, when we spar him, we can go 100%, man. There's no way, we spar one day, you go 100%, next day you're not gonna be able to train, When we train American champion, we go usually 80, 70%, something like that, But, when we train with pads, and we do the Muay Thai training, we go 100% and we try to stay on balance. Now, every time you kick, you gotta bring the leg back to the fight position, and sprawl, we do all these things, so when the fight, it gets a little easier, when you kick, you gotta bring the leg back so you can control your body more, you got more strength on the kick and everything, so, yeah, in the fight, everything I can throw, man, I can throw on a guy, I throw everything I can, bro, but, you gotta have the control of everything. I'm gonna throw this right hand, but I can't lean forward too much. Otherwise, I'm gonna lose my balance. If I kick, I gotta bring my leg back. Otherwise, they're gonna take me down. It's all about timing.
Yeah.
Do you ever think in the back of your mind? Is this in the back of your mind? I've thrown a few hard kicks that have been checked, and it's almost worse than getting kicked. Is that ever in the back of your mind that you throw your hardest kick and you're gonna get checked and actually hurt yourself during the fight?
When I used to fight Muay Thai, bro, it was way worse, because in Muay Thai, you really get hurt, You kick a lot, the guy check a lot, sometimes you kick in the knee, you kick the elbow. But that's the thing, when you're fighting, you don't think about anything, the next day, you can't even walk. I did a couple fights in Muay Thai, next day, I couldn't even walk, but in a fight, you don't care, you just kick, you don't feel pain right away. When you get knocked out, you don't feel anything, you just, boom, pass out. That's why when you get hurt, of course, the worst thing is get hit in the body and the leg. That's the worst pain ever for a fighter. In the jaw, man, you don't feel. If you get hit hard in the jaw, you're just gonna, pass out. If it goes a little bit harder, you're gonna get dizzy and everything. But in the leg, low kick, I don't feel anything, bro. Just throw the hardest I can,
Do you think you have a distinct advantage then coming from Muay Thai, where you can take an unbelievable amount of punishment on your legs and in the body, and you're just basically used to that more than someone who basically trains Muay Thai in the gym but has never actually fought or competed?
Yeah, of course. When you used to fight Muay Thai, you used to get hit a lot. There's no such a thing. You fight Muay Thai, you're not going to get hit or hurt. Every fight, even if it's an easy fight, you're going to get hit. You're going to get hurt next day. You're going to feel your shin is swallow, your knee or something like that, that's make it easier for us when you fight MMA, It's way easier because, believe me, it's way harder you fight Muay Thai, you get way hurt than when you fight MMA. Sometimes I fight MMA, I don't even get hurt, There's no way you fight Muay Thai and you don't get injured the next day,
Tiago,
so it's a little bit easier.
Do you ever approach fighters, Tiago, and you just say, hey, I'm not even going to go throw any leg kicks or kicks at all just because of your opponent's wrestling capabilities? Or are you a fighter that just is going to throw them no matter who the opponent is?
No, I throw everything. I've got to just wait for the right time, you know. You can't show the guy you're going to kick. This is a good wrestler. You've got to be a little bit careful, you know. With Tony, I didn't kick. I kicked once or twice, something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. You got to wait for the right time. Everything's time. If you've got the perfect time to kick, you know, and defend your kick, sprawl after that, you know, you can throw it. But you got to have the time, you know. It's all about timing, man. If you have the timing, you know, I'm sure I'm going to throw this. You know, he's not going to catch me. You can't let everything go, you know.
Yeah.
Well, Thiago, it looks like in your last two victories over John Alessio and Tony D'Souza, you have impeccable timing in the UFC. And I hope your 2007 is as strong as your 2006. You seem to be a very exciting fighter. So my last question for you is how do you look at yourself now in comparison to the top five 170s in the UFC? So who do you think those guys would be, and how do you think you rank up with them right now?
I know I'm not in a top five right now. I know I'm still in the bottom, but I'm gonna get there. I know I got a lot of time. I know I got a lot of things to work on, and I'm just gonna get better and better, training harder and harder, you know. And when is my time, I'm gonna do really good, man. I promise you that, you know. I'm gonna take my time and wait for my time to get there. Once I get there, man, nobody's gonna take me from there.
And who would you put it in the top five, Thiago? I mean, roughly. I mean, you've got George St. Pierre, Matt Hughes, Diego Sanchez. What about John Fitch? You fought John Fitch. Some people would regard John as one of the better welterweights. Your thoughts on John?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely, man. John is a tough guy, bro. Really, really good wrestler, you know. Really tough guy, man. I'd like to get my rematch against him someday, you know. Mm-hmm. I got 3 fights left in the contract, you know. We'll see. I already asked UFC for that, you know. I got a lot of respect for him, you know. He was the first guy, man, who really beat me, you know. He kicked my ass, bro. I'm sorry for that. You know, but he did, bro. And I got no excuse, you know. I didn't lose the weight that good in that fight. No, I was kind of weak, but, man, he kicked my ass, you know. I got no excuse at all. So I'm pretty sure, man, if I'm 100%, you know, it's going to be a different fight. It's going to be a way different fight. So I already told UFC that, you know. I never asked for opponents or anything. Whoever UFC gives to me, it's all good, you know. But I got this thing, you know. I wanted my rematch against him, you know. Mm-hmm. I got all the respect for him, and he for sure is a top five, you know. I'm sure. He's a top five. I think he's the number five. Parisians, the fourth, you know, and like Sasha's, Hills, and St. Pierre.
Yeah, and that's definitely a good top five. I think a lot of people would agree with that. And I think some people, too, are eyeing Josh Koscheck might be getting up there as well based on some of his recent performances. Your thoughts on Josh, Thiago?
Oh, yeah, no, Josh's a tough guy. Tough wrestling, too, man. Good wrestling, you know. You know, all the rest of the tough, man. You know, the 170 division, bro, it's the worst division. I mean, it's the bad division, you know. It's the worst for us, you know. I mean, but it's fun, man, you know, because when you're the champion, you know, there's no way, you know, this guy's fighting UFC, but the other guy fighting Pride, I think the Pride champ is better. No, 170, there's no other show, you know, like the 170 division UFC.
Yeah.
So, St. Pierre, man, is the champion. He's the man. You know, everybody knows that. There's nobody better than him right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a good thing about the 170 in UFC. You know, if you were a top five, you know you're really a top five in the world. You know, that's the good thing about it.
Hey, Thiago, one quick last question. Give us a couple updates on a couple of your teammates. Is it true? Is Munson going to fight Fedor in Russia, number one? And how is Dennis's how is Dennis's injury healing up?
Dennis has been good. Dennis he was in Korea, I think, for 20 days, you know. The guys are like the young Michael Jackson, man, in Korea. You guys got to see that. It's very, very funny, man. He's the man over there. He can even walk in the street, you know. He was doing some TV shows and everything. I think he spent the New Year's over there. He's going to come back on a January 9th. So, yeah, man, Jeff is going to fight Fedor, you know. Give him a big money, you know, so he's going to do it.
And you did say the young Michael Jackson, not the old Michael Jackson.
Yeah, no, the young Michael Jackson, not the old guy.
Thanks for clarifying that. Dennis might think something else, but... All right, Thiago, well, we appreciate coming on the show, bro, and take care of yourself.
All right, thank you, guys. My pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
A pleasure to all.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Does your neighborhood sound like this every night? Well, if it does, maybe it's time you get ready to rumble and pick up some instructional martial arts DVDs from the Full Contact Fighter website. FCFighter.com has a great assortment of DVDs, and if you feel you can learn how to scrap just by watching the pros fight, then take a look at our great selection of MMA events from all over the globe. FCS prices will not be beat. Head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again, 516-676-0033.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League continues its 2007 inaugural season Friday, February 2nd at the Reliant Arena. See Boss Rutan's Anacondas battle Pat Miletich's Silverbacks and Antonio Inoki Sabres face off against Don Fry's Scorpion. Plus the super fight between MMA legends Matt the Law Lindland and Carlos the Rona Newton. Be there Friday, February 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at the Reliant Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 713-629-3700 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
Full Contact Fighter.
Undefeated, no holds barred, news source of the world.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Mr. Jake Shields. Jake, how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. A little tired. Just finished my workout for today. Doing good.
Now, Jake, of course, is going to be fighting Renato Verissimo coming up on January 20th. It's taking place in Miami, Florida at the Gracie Fighting Championship. And Jake, my first question for you is, when you talk about a guy with Renato, he's got a lot of experience as far as being in the bigger shows and whatnot, but what are you expecting out of Renato, and what's the game plan going to be going in against him?
What I'm expecting, you know, I've seen him look really good and look not so good. So I'm training for him to be his best, because he's his best. He's a hell of a fighter, so I'm training my ass off. And the game plan is I'm going to go out there and just try to bring the heat. You know, I'm going in there in great shape, doing a lot of boxing. I'm probably going to try to knock him out. I'm willing to go on the ground, too, and just see where the fight goes. But I'm just planning on bringing full pressure and bring it.
In a
knockout or a TKO.
So. Yeah, and you make a good point. He's a guy that, you know, he's got wins over Carlos Newton. Some people had him beating Matt Hughes even at UFC 48.
And then,
and he had Frank Trigg in a ton of trouble, and then he's lost his last two fights. Do you have any thoughts on why that is? Have you studied tape? Do you have any theories on maybe why he hasn't looked as good recently?
I just think guys get lazy sometimes, you know? Sometimes guys get slack and get caught in other things, and that would be my guess, but you never know when they get the fire back and train their ass off, his course is blowing up. You know, he's a really, really talented fighter. If he puts in the work and has the work ethic, you know, he's one of the better guys out there. But if not, you know, then he's going to get smashed.
Yeah.
Because I'm going in there 100%. You know, I'm not training 2-3 times a day, working out with the best guys, you know, doing sprints, doing everything. Course blowing up, and I'm planning on being one of the top guys, so.
Jake, the last time we talked to you was after your win against Berger at the best named show ever, Malice at the Cow Palace.
Malice at the Palace.
in between that time, were you involved in arrangement to fight for the now defunct World Fighting Organization?
Yeah, as far as I know, you know, they never officially went under, but my contract expired with them. I mean, I signed with them, I got a signing bonus and stuff, so it worked out for me. But yeah, I rewrote the contract, so I was out within, you know, a certain amount of days if the show hadn't gone out. So my contract's done with them. So as far as I know, they're done. But, you know, I can't really complain. I got paid. It held me back for a little bit from fighting, but, you know, I think the guy meant well. I just think he got a little over his head, so.
Well, and how did the Gracie Fighting Championship come about? I mean, obviously you've trained a lot with Cesar Gracie. This has got to be a great opportunity for you. It's a great card.
Yeah, I mean... Cesar was talking to guys, he's giving me a call.
I mean, they
were offering me, they offered good money, they were offering Frank Trigg at first, and, obviously I want to fight Trigg, that's the guy I wanted to fight for a while, but they said, I even had a contract with Frank Trigg's name on it, sent over to my house, we agreed to fight at 180, but for whatever reasons, I'm not sure why, they stopped me from doing Trigg not wanting to fight me, and then Sadie didn't want to fight in the cards, but then all of a sudden he's fighting on the cards, so I signed with Trudeau.
So you're saying you were supposed to fight, you were going to fight Trigg at 180?
Yeah, but then he started making saying he didn't really want to fight me, so he switched it to Trudeau, and then he was saying he didn't want to fight on the card, but then as soon as I tried to fight Trudeau, then all of a sudden he signed to fight someone else. Typical Trigg.
So yeah, obviously it sounds like you'd like to fight Frank pretty bad here.
Yeah, I'm still over it, so the guy keeps, you know, getting out of it.
Did you happen to catch his fight against Mayhem?
No, it looked good though. So yeah, I was hoping he'd win because I want to fight him, get him back on track.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I mean, Frank Drake's fighting Ivan Orge. There's this great lineup on the card. Your fight, of course, which is great. And then you got Nick Diaz versus Thomas Denny. You know, and last time we had it in the show, and this is a perennial question on the forums that we just mentioned. People are always wondering about, you know, why you haven't been in the UFC yet. Do you think that if you were to beat Renato, that's going to put you one step closer to the UFC, or is this something you don't really concern yourself with?
I'm getting some offers and stuff from him, so it's definitely, I mean, I'm very interested in the UFC. If somewhere I want to fight, you know, it's definitely a great show. But just so far, the offers, the timing, and you know, just things with the offers just didn't quite work out. But I definitely plan to be on there soon. I mean, it's not like, I'm given the opportunity to fight there now. It's just a matter of when I go in there. So just fight these two. I mean, the show is blowing up, and it's definitely something I want to be part of. I just want to go in there, you know, under the right conditions.
So is the Gracie Fighting Championship, is this going to be an on and off thing, or once every couple, once a couple times a year? It's not something, not an organization you're committed to or committed to in the long term?
You know, I tried to one fight deal with them. They're offering me several fights, but right now I'm just, there's so many shows going up. It's kind of a difficult time. There's so many choices. I mean, it's a good problem to have, but I have a lot of offers right now. I'm just concentrating on this one fight and trying to sort everything where else to go from here.
Well, Jake, I know you're driving right now, and it's kind of a bad connection, so maybe we should let you go. It's really hard. You're kind of breaking up, but we appreciate you coming on.
Not here. Yeah. Maybe next time we'll try to get him to have a house phone.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you coming on the show, and best of luck on January 20th.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Okay. The best stuff for MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans. You listen to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Brendan, there is an absolute ton of stuff that we can discuss here as we wrap up the show, and some of it we've already discussed as far as UFC 66, talked a little bit about that with Thiago Alves and the big win over Tony D'Souza. But, you know, my first question for you, Brendan, you know, let's go in chronological order somewhat. IFL, like I mentioned in the intro, we haven't had a chance to see it yet, but were you surprised by any of the results? It sounds like Carlos Newton might have been robbed again.
I haven't looked at the results. I've been waiting to find it somewhere because it's not going to be broadcast here for ages, and I can't find it anywhere. So I haven't looked at the results, but I did read that Newton is supposedly robbed. And I'm being the homers that we are, you know, once we see it, we'll probably rail about it. So we shouldn't talk about it if we haven't seen it now.
Yeah. Well, you always try to lump me into the homer thing, and you know, I resent that, man.
I have to apologize because you are an MMA journalist, whereas I am a shameless home crowd rooter. And it's basically a MMA gadfly, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's not, like we're trying to get Carlos on the show later in the week, so hopefully that pans out and he can tell us a little bit more about his fight with Henzo. But, you know, certainly not a problem that's only indicative to the IFL. I mean, this is a reoccurring problem across the MMA world. I'd like to think that it's getting a little bit bigger in some of the larger promotions, but I do find when you watch some small-time promotions, even some of the ones that I've attended, sometimes it's actually laughable how much discrepancy there can be between two or three different judges' scores, and you can have someone winning a fight 30-27, and then judge number two will score it the opposite for the 30-27 for the opposite guy. So it's definitely something that needs to be addressed in the MMA world.
Well, I think you're going to see more of it because especially in the IFL, because if they start jumping around from state to state, and the state is involved in selecting selecting referees and judges, then obviously you're going to see more of that if they go to smaller states who don't do much MMA.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised, you know.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I guess we can get into UFC 66 a little bit. There wasn't certainly any really scoring controversies. And really,
I love the judges in UFC 66.
Yeah. Well, pretty a controversy-free card altogether, but, you know, if you look at our picks, Brendan, there was only, I think, one fight that there was a variance between the two of us, and that was with Keith Jardine and Forrest Griffin, and you went with Keith Jardine, and, you know, you can't even really call that an upset, you know, I don't think, but Keith Jardine pulls out a big win and looks very impressive doing it.
Yeah, it was a huge win, I actually thought that Jardine might back off a little bit more and not trade so much with the fists, but it certainly worked for him, and he wasn't scared to go toe to toe with Forrest. He wasn't scared to brawl with him, and he basically took it to Forrest's world and owned him there. And I think the reaction from Forrest was indicative of that. You know, he didn't pull out any trick or any kind of crazy tricky sub. He just stood in there and beat him. So I think it was a really interesting fight to watch for me, actually. It was very interesting, and of course the aftermath was interesting as well, Forrest's reaction, and I think it was good. It was a good, earnest, honest fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that early on it looked like Forrest was maybe had a little bit of a slight edge as far as he looked like to be a little bit quicker than Jardine and looked to be hitting the mark a bit more, but there certainly wasn't any real telling blows. And then when Jardine landed that left hook, and then I think it was like a follow-up uppercut, or maybe it was vice versa, that really spelled the end for Griffin quickly after that. And, you know, it's when he was on the ground and Jardine was on top and pounding away, I thought the referee did a good job at jumping in when he did, but Griffin took some hard shots, and he certainly appeared dazed, but I was actually somewhat surprised he wasn't unconscious from some of those blows he took.
Well, I think one of the differences between sort of A-level fighters and guys coming up to make A-level fighters are the ability to sense and execute the finish, right? So oftentimes you see during a knockdown, guys will just, you know, sort of fall into a full guard and the fight will get stalled from there, and they just don't have that killer instinct. They just can't finish the fight or put it away. And Jardine showed there that, you know, his transition from instantaneously sensing that Forrest was a bit rocked and to literally deciding to finish the fight at that point was it was just seamless, and that was one of the things I was really impressed with there. And Diego, you know, Diego sort of showed the exact same thing against Riggs as well. So, you know, maybe that's something that can be taught, because they certainly executed it that flawlessly, that transition.
Mm-hmm. And there's a couple other performances that are definitely worthy of mentioning before we get into discussing maybe some of the bigger fights, Liddell and McDonald and whatnot. But I think one thing that it's unfortunate it wasn't on the pay-per-view, but this guy's certainly making waves, is Yushin Okami. He gets the win over Rory Singer. He's had several wins in a row now. Mm-hmm. And I think people should definitely start considering him as a possible contender down the road at 185.
Yeah, I actually thought Okami was going to blow Singer out, and the first two rounds were actually fairly boring in that fight. I thought, anyway, it was, you know, nothing dramatic. Okami getting the better of the stand-up and getting in his shots where he could, and taking Singer down a couple different times. And I think Singer, it was really a war of attrition for Okami. You know, Okami didn't look like he was going to end it standing with any one or two big punches, but he basically wore him down and chopped him down, and then finally finished it with a bit of a ground and pound very late in the third. So it was a good win for him. But I actually thought he was going to walk through Singer. So I was surprised that Singer hung in as long as he did.
And Michael Bisping, he looked really impressive as well. And that was kind of a fight that was being billed as the classic striker versus grappler, and Bisping looked very competent. I mean, he demonstrated some good ground capabilities on the reality show in his previous fight experience, but against Skyler Schaefer, who's got a bit of a reputation for being a skilled ground practitioner, a big win for Bisping, and managed to get the fight back up standing where he excels and gets the big win.
Yeah, I was not as impressed with Bisping as everyone else was. I thought he looked unsure of himself a little bit on the feet. I thought he looked unsure of a little bit of himself on the ground, and I was actually thought he might get caught a couple times. I think Schaefer wouldn't have gassed in that fight, and I think he definitely did gas
during the end of that round. I think it might have been a different story. He looked to have Bisping in trouble a couple different times, and Bisping looked, I guess he didn't look shaky. To me, he looked a little bit more reckless than he wasn't fighting very conscientiously, and I didn't really think that was his style, you know, so I thought that was something, a bit of a different look from him, for me anyway.
Yeah, well, like I guess I can relate to some of what you're saying. I just felt that I think he was maybe just a bit nervous because Schaefer is known for, you know, being kind of a fighter that could have the edge over Bisping on the ground, and I think he was just a little bit concerned maybe about that, but who knows, I can't read his mind, but mm-hmm. regardless of that, it's definitely a win for him and moves him forward in the 205 division. Another fight that we both picked with the winner was Andre Arlovski or Marcio Cruz. Not really too much of a surprise to neither one of us here, I don't think.
That was kind of like the comic relief of the night for me and everyone who was watching with me. I just kind of thought, what was Cruz thinking, you know, when when they're getting ready to restart the fight on the ground? And, and Andre Arlovski sitting there with his fist basically cocked, ready to let one fly.
Yeah.
And Cruz just sort of let it all unfold before him. I don't know if there was a confusion there or what was going on, but I didn't really understand it. It was kind of, you know, Arlovski thought, is he really going to let me punch him in the head? He kind of had that surprised look on his face, like, you know, did that just happen? And then he sort of got up and that was done.
Yeah, I think it'd be too simple of an argument to say, well, Cruz is very experienced in the submission grappling world, very accomplished, and has only recently made the transition to MMA, but that, like I said, that'd be too simple of an argument because one would just have to logically assume that he's been doing a great deal of training with strikes, etc. So, yeah, I'm not sure. And again, that if you want to watch a highlight package of the perils of going for leg locks or ankle locks at certain moments of the fight, that definitely is a highlight that you would like to queue up.
Well, and I think, you know, maybe he was lulled into the idea that this was going to be maybe a leg lock war when they both got down there. And, I didn't think that Arlovski would be in any trouble, as the, you know, sort of Sambo guys are notorious for having complete leg lock repertoire and also a defense. But maybe he was actually lulled into the idea that, you know, if we're going to get into a leg lock battle, then nothing else is going to happen to me down here. So
yeah,
maybe that was the mistake.
And then Jason McDonald over Chris Lieben, and we both went with Jason on that fight. We both expected a tight, competitive fight, and I think it really was. There's a few moments there where McDonald seemed to be kind of scrambling and always seemed conscious of the fact that, you know, Lieben's known for having a big, very powerful left hand and was covering up well. But there was a couple moments there where you almost, I can't speak for you, but there's a couple moments where I thought, oh, okay, you know, this could be it. Lieben could land the big shot here, and Jason did a good job and got the fight to the ground and got the nice modified guillotine choke.
Yeah, there were a couple of those moments as well, but I had the sense from watching him fight and watching him sort of unveil his strategy in the first round that he was very, very focused on doing one thing in that fight. And in the scrambles, he didn't look very offensive in the scrambles, but I think maybe that looked like he was unsure or didn't have the confidence in his stand up, but I think he was just had a single-minded focus on how he wanted to end that fight, and that really revealed itself in the way that the fight finished. And McDonald is really he's really a systematic fighter. You know, I don't think he feels that the scrambles are his are where he lives in the same way that Lieben does. You know, Lieben has many, many knockouts from scrambles, right?
Yeah.
And from the sort of bedlam and confusion of coming in and out of the clinch, but McDonald is a real systematic boxer and a systematic ground guy, and you knew that once he got him to the ground that he could work, and he was comfortable working from that position and just going, you know, a sort of 1-2-3 type of a fight that's probably not Lieben's forte.
Yeah, and then with Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz, we both went with Chuck, and I think I can't recall exactly if we got into rounds or not, but I think I I predicted that the fight would last a little bit longer than their first fight, and it did go a little bit longer, and there was a little bit of time there in the second round where it almost seemed like Tito was gaining a little bit of confidence, throwing some leg kicks, throwing some kicks to the midsection of Chuck, which seemed to give Liddell a little bit of something else to think about. And then after Liddell checked a couple of those kicks, it almost seemed like you could see the confidence that Tito had briefly had somewhat disappear. And you know, it was kind of the fight really unfolded pretty much outside of Tito throwing kicks, as I expected. You know, just Chuck, too tough to take down. Tito kept going for those takedowns from the outside. Wasn't getting in there for the clinch, etc. too much, where I think that's the best way to take Chuck down. And if you fear that, if you can't compete with him striking wise, at least for a few seconds, you're going to have a hell of a time getting him to the ground.
Well, I was actually surprised that he was throwing so many kicks because, you know, that's one of the reasons I asked the question earlier on in the show is, you know, how hard do you throw your kicks if you aren't used to getting your kicks checked? You know, how confident are you in and being able to just unleash when you could have a check, you know, a kick checked, and either if you have a bad contact with your foot, or even if you do get a check clean in the shin, you know, you're still in some serious difficulty if you're not used to that. And Tito, you know, he may be able to kick hard, he may be able to execute a hard kick, but I don't think he's really conditioned to go in there and blast like that. And I think, didn't he say something like that? You know, you checked one of my kicks and I felt like I broke my foot. Well,
yeah.
You know, I guess that's the price you pay if you go in and throw those hard kicks.
And then, of course, the other big show this weekend was Pride. I did the write-up for the website on it. And, it, you know, the one thing that kind of struck me immediately about it is, and I put this in the piece, was that Pride's had a tough year. There's no question about it. Crow Cop is gone. They lost Sakuraba. As far as draw in Japan goes, that was a huge blow to them, and then the loss of their cable deal with Fiji TV, etc., has hurt them financially, one would definitely guess. So they've had a tough year, and there's a lot of rumors and speculation about what's going on, but it was kind of nice, you know, to watch Shockwave and just enjoy the fights, and then you kind of sit back, or at least I sat back and thought, you know, there's a great level of fighters and Pride still, and despite the fact that some of these guys have gone like Krokop's out of the picture now, they still have a lot to offer.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And you know, like I said going into this, the only thing I didn't think I was going to appreciate about the fights were the lack of premier matchups, but I was quite happy, you know, with the way it unfolded. However, I did actually read what was reported to be a translation of a Sakuraba interview where he was almost many of his comments were almost resigned to the fact that the war is over with the UFC and that the UFC has basically gotten a strategic edge, and now Pride has to work towards some kind of reconciliation with that organization. So it was really bizarre, and I haven't seen it reported widely. But if that was an accurate translation of the interview, it sort of represented quite a remarkable turn of the events for the new year.
Yeah, and you know, looking back at the fights a little bit, there's definitely some possible matchups which come out of Shockwave, and I think the one that immediately strikes me as a possible great fight in 2007 would be Gilbert Melendez fighting Takanori Gomi, who both won on Sunday.
Oh yeah, you know, that fight was the Melendez fight was just spectacular. I thought it was a wonderful fight to watch, very exciting. And it was funny because I was watching Pride actually with my dad and some of his old friends. And these guys hadn't really seen much MMA before, and it was very entertaining. They're kind of on the edge of their seats for that fight, and between my having to explain all the different things that were going on, Pride was a good show. And then that fight, you know, there were good fights on the show. And then of course, what would a Shockwave card be without some absolutely bizarre matchups as well. So
yeah. Well, I think you actually went with Ishida, and I went with Gomi, so I think we were even for the whole weekend. I think that was one fight that we differed as well. And Gomi, I mean, that's a huge win for him.
It was huge, and yeah. I think if anything, that win demonstrated that he's back and he's ready to throw hard. And I think he needed that win to have his confidence because, you know, like we had mentioned, what kind of champion would he be to have lost two times in 1 year, you know, non-champion or non-belt matches, so.
And then I rewatched the whole Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira and Josh Barnett fight again today, and, you know, it's funny because it's sometimes amazing how much you get from a fight watching it, and then you do a write-up or you just think about it, and then when you watch the second time, you notice a lot more, and I had Nogueira winning that fight when I saw it on Sunday. There was no doubt in my mind that he had won, and after watching it today, I'm not necessarily saying that there's no doubt that he won, but it was a lot closer than I had thought. When you watch it again, there's some portions where Nogueira perhaps isn't landing as much as one might have thought watching it that night. I mean, obviously you have the benefit of replay and rewinding things, etc. But that fight was a lot closer than I had thought on Sunday. And maybe perhaps that was due to the fact that Barnett looked just battered, really, compared to Nogueira. But nonetheless, you know, still a big win for Nogueira.
Yeah, I think, it's tough to say, and I think with the Pride rules, if they would have taken the Pride rules literally, then why would Nogueira have won that fight? Because Barnett came was definitely the closest to finishing the fight
with the guillotine
a couple different times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Barnett was closest to finishing the fight a couple different times. So why didn't he win if that's the first criteria? So, you know, I don't even think they know half the time what the criteria for their fights are.
Well, I think that's part of it as well, is that when you watch it the first night, the visual appearance of things, I think, does so much to the human mind. And when you watch the, especially near the second end of the second round, Nogueira starts to land some shots, and Barnett looks pretty beat up. And there's some portions where Barnett's kind of, you can really tell he's starting to fade. It's conditioning. He looked like he was kind of in trouble from a couple knees to the body from Nogueira. And so when the fight kind of spilled to the ground, I think that's perhaps, I can't speak for the judges, but maybe that's what they were thinking, is, you know, here's Nogueira really dominating. But then when you watch the fight again, in fact, a lot of it is Nogueira defending from submission attempts from Barnett, etc., especially in the third round. But still, I don't want to take anything away from Nogueira. I thought it's a big win for him, and now, in a sense, it'll be interesting to see what Pride does, because one would think, and Pride is not necessarily known for doing what is logical, perhaps, but one would think that Nogueira and Fedor at Part 4 is not a real possibility anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I would have been very happy with Nogueira and Barnett being a draw, and I don't think there's just if you got three judges, you can't have a draw. So, I would have been very happy seeing that being called a draw, and it would be tough. It would be tough to pick another fight that would be more deserving of a draw if you believe in such things. And maybe the Pride rules are set up to, to avoid fighters fighting for a draw. But maybe, I'm not sure how you would really get around that. I'm sure that's the thinking behind it. But, you know, can you think of a fight that was closer and more warranted of that?
Well, their previous fight was definitely
pretty close. Exactly, and I would have been happy with that being a draw as well.
Yeah, and what's your assessment of Fedor Emelianenko's performance that night? Is it that Hunt has just improved himself so much so that he maybe threw Fedor a little bit for a loop, or is it that Fedor perhaps is underestimating him a little bit, or is it a combination?
I don't know if you had to ask me, I would say that, in my most pessimistic moods, I would say that, Fedor got paid per round maybe in that fight instead of to win.
Well, I was that ended in the first round still.
Yeah, I know, but it seemed like I was wondering whether or not he would come down, instantly try for the shot and get the quick sub, and he didn't end up doing that. But you know, when you're rolling around with big guys like that, like Hunt is 290 pounds, and you and I have a common friend that I grappled with anyway, who was an old judo guy, and you know, he's not even really that big a guy, but you know, when someone's laying on top of you in side position, who literally has 50 pounds on you, you know, they're tough to move off.
Yeah.
And you know, even, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, he's fitter than trouble, and you know, during the Americana attempt and stuff like that. And I certainly didn't think that. But you know, sometimes it takes a little while to hump those big dudes off you. And I was actually surprised that Fedor stood up and threw as much as he did actually with Hunt. I thought he was going to clinch him, and I thought he was going to clinch him and try and take him down. And I guess you know, if anything, Hunt is because he's so big and because he's a kickboxer, is, you know, not completely inadequate in the clinch. And sometimes when you go for those trip takedowns like Fedor was going through, you end up on the bottom.
Yeah,
and that's something I'm sure he was willing, very very much willing to risk.
Yeah, and that's where I think Hunt does deserve some credit. I think there's some people out there saying, hey, you know, Fedor had an off night, and Hunt's not a real potential contender. But I would argue against that. I definitely think that maybe Fedor took him a little bit lightly and didn't necessarily perceive any true danger being on the bottom, etc. But for sure, Hunt deserves credit. He acted well within the clinch, a couple of the takedowns, you're right. I mean, he countered it and wound up on top. So the submission attempt aside, which is a fairly basic submission that most people learn within the first couple classes of jiu-jitsu, as far as rolling out of the armbar attempt, not panicking,
That was the most impressive part of the fight for me. Like I was shocked when he squirted out of that armbar. I was absolutely shocked. And then Fedor lost. Fedor, I only watched the fight actually once. Fedor, I believe, right after that, lost position as well. And so that's one of the things that shocked me. And I was actually really excited after that happened in the fight. And I thought just very briefly, what's going to happen here? You know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there was that one point in the round, and it was shortly before the fight ended, that Fedor had been under Hunt for quite some time, and then he finally bumped him off and got up, and you could kind of sense the rage. There's rarely any emotion on Fedor's face, but there was a brief glimpse of that, and then he sort of charged at Hunt and started throwing harder punches and took the fight down and ended it fairly quickly.
Yeah, I don't know what was with him that night, because even during the press conference, he was kind of smiling and joking around, and in the warm ups and in the opening announcements where they announce all the fighters, he's smiling, and I thought, what's going on with him? You know, because usually you don't see any of that.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting for me to see that, and to see Fedor, you know, literally look angry in the ring, because he's so calm and collected and emotionless.
Last thing I just want to touch on before we go was the Shinya Aoki's win over Joachim Hansen. And I think that people, well, not everybody, but I think sometimes we have a tendency to overlook some of these lightweight matchups. And Hansen has been one of the preeminent lightweights in the world for some time. And the fact that he loses to Aoki with a beautiful go-go plata, I was very impressed with Aoki. And now the debate about the pants rages on.
Well, I don't think the pants factored into this fight, apart from the fact that they were totally awesome. And I think for once, Hansen was outstyled. I think he was going to bring down. He thought he was going to bring down the house with his grown back hair and his cool goatee. But the rainbow pants definitely outstyled him, and I was really surprised, because if one thing that Hansen a couple of years ago was very susceptible to that, you know, all sorts of different submissions that he wasn't used to and hadn't seen before, and just basically plain Jane submissions. But that's one thing in the last couple of years that he has, I know, worked very diligently on, and I was actually quite startled to actually see him submitted in that way. And I was actually kind of sad. It's been so long since we've seen him fight. I was quite unsatisfied, although impressed with the ending of that fight.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I mean, he's only lost twice by submission, dude. I mean, it's not like he's getting choked out all the time. He's got five losses. And...
Well, no, but we're talking, like, you know, I say that at the same time, consider Hansen to be probably the number two or three lightweight fighter in Pride. So, you know,
I think he's got to lose the hair. I think he looks more menacing without the hair.
Definitely, yeah. You know, he looked almost friendly with his hair.
I know, it was kind of creepy. Like, I turned to my girlfriend and I've got some older DVDs, Shido stuff, and I was like, "Do you remember that guy?" And she had made a remark about how scary he looked watching some of his fights. She's like, "No." I'm like, "Oh, it's Joachim Hansen, the crazy Scandinavian fighter that you were scared of." he looks good.
Well, he normally looks like he walks out of the TV series Oz. You know, he has some American penal system, but he looked downright friendly with his hair.
Yeah.
And who'd have thought he had red hair?
I know. It's Viking heritage, man. That's what it's all about.
You would know better than most, Kelsey.
That's true. I do have some Norwegian ancestry, so if anybody really cares out there. All right, Brendan, well, we got to get out of here. We'll talk to you later in the week. And
we certainly have more things to rant about later on in the week, so I'll get up a good head of steam.
Okay. We'll all look forward to that. All right, man, we'll talk to you then.
All right, Kelsey. Bye-bye.